Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Money Talking from WNYC. I'm Charlie Herman. Well, not to put too fine a point on it, but Puerto Rico is a mess. The government there owes more than $70 billion to its creditors, and it's basically running out of money. It's had to shift funds from one place to another to pay back investors. And this week in doing that, the Commonwealth defaulted on some of that debt. The island's governor is saying that Puerto Rico can't pay back what it owes.
This is not political rhetoric. This is mathematics. It's very simple. We don't have money to pay.
That is Governor Alejandro Garcia Padilla on CNBC this week. So what's next and how might that affect what's happening here on the mainland? Well, with me are two people who have been closely watching the situation in Puerto Rico, Peter Coy with Bloomberg Businessweek and Allison Schrager with Quartz. And Peter, first, how did Puerto Rico get itself into this position?
Well, go back to 1898. The U.S. won the Spanish-American War.
Got to really go back.
Yeah, liberated Cuba. Next, Puerto Rico. For a long while, Puerto Rico did pretty well. It was one of the most prosperous parts of Latin America, and it had a break on taxes. Puerto Ricans don't pay federal income tax. They do serve in the military. They don't vote for president, but they can be elected president. So it's kind of a weird grab bag. They had a big tax break that allowed for a lot of manufacturing. A very manufacturing-intensive economy. That tax break went away. Ever since then, Puerto Rico has been slowly sinking into the Caribbean. Things are getting worse and worse. A series of governments hasn't really dealt with the issues properly. There's still a lot of promise there, a lot of potential, but it's not being realized, and we've gotten to the point where we are today.
So, Allison, if the country has this much debt, you know, for a company, what they would do is file for bankruptcy. Is this an option for the island, or is there something else that they could do to try and get rid of this debt?
No, it's not an option. Like any state, they can't declare bankruptcy. But in most states in the mainland U.S., municipalities can. But even Puerto Rican cities can't, nor can their electric company or any sort of those entities. So they really aren't left with any sort of options to discharge their debt.
If I could jump in on that, Charlie, the Obama administration actually says that the Puerto Rican agencies should be allowed to file for protection from creditors in bankruptcy court, federal bankruptcy court, and that actually the Commonwealth itself as well should be allowed to do that. So far, they haven't gotten a lot of support in Congress, but it actually makes a lot of sense as a way to get out of this mess.
Is that the solution?
Well, most likely. I mean, I think what people have to understand is that, first of all, they can't pay the debt that they owe. And being able to file Chapter 9 doesn't necessarily mean they're not going to pay any of their debt. It's just there's a lot of different debt that has different priority. You have the general obligation bonds, which are constitutionally guaranteed. You've got pension obligations. They're about to completely run out of money in their pension fund. Those are constitutionally guaranteed. So what filing for Chapter 9 does is give you an orderly way to figure out how much debt can be paid and look at the problem holistically.
So while there isn't an obvious solution right now in terms of what to do, what is the impact for the people who are actually living in Puerto Rico?
Well, it's terrible. I mean, people are leaving the island every day. Crime is up. I heard a statistic that 8% of drugs coming into the mainland are going through Puerto Rico. And, you know, as I said, they're going to run out of money for their pensions. You know, they're coming down to worrying about whether or not they're going to pay their bondholders or whether or not they're going to pay their municipal employees. I mean, the economy is not going to get any better as long as they're having to make all these debt payments.
So, Peter, is this something that Congress is actually taking seriously, or is this something that is going to be really hard to fix because of the presidential political season we're getting into?
Well, the funny thing is that a lot of people regard an eligibility for bankruptcy as if it's a bailout, when actually in many ways it's the opposite. It's kind of saying, as Allison put it very nicely, it's creating an orderly way to deal with a problem that exists. And if there is no bankruptcy, inevitably, Puerto Rico is part of the United States, there would have to be some sort of aid.
Some sort of bailout.
Either that or everybody leaves the island and then they're ending up in places like Orlando and so on, which is actually worse because you've destroyed the integrity
of the economy
in Puerto Rico.
So is there a precedent, though, that said if you allow a state to file for bankruptcy, which you said they can't?
Well, because it's not a state. I mean, you could argue that, you know, territories can declare bankruptcy. It might set a precedent for Guam, but it needn't set a precedent for states. Although in some ways it will set a precedent in that, you know, at the heart of pretty much every financial crisis, be it Greece, Brazil, or Puerto Rico and possibly Illinois or pensions. So it is setting a precedent somewhat on how the federal government is now stepping into states and municipalities that have unsustainable debts.
And what happens to those pensions should there be a bankruptcy declaration allowed?
Well, it's interesting because states usually guarantee pensions in their constitutions, as does Puerto Rico. And when you file Chapter 9, because it's a federal law, that trumps the state guarantee. So you actually have room to renegotiate pensions.
So when you look at this, Peter, is this the most likely course of action? You think that at some point Congress will step in, or at some point they will be allowed to do something like this, or are we just going to keep muddling through?
Yeah, I think it is the most likely thing. It's just a shame that it has to be get worse and worse and worse, and real damage is done to the economy during that period until people finally succumb to the inevitable.
And if I'm somebody who doesn't go to Puerto Rico or doesn't really think it has an effect on me, explain to me why I really should care about what happens there.
Well, you might be a bondholder. A lot of the mainlanders do own bonds. They might not even be aware of it because it's part of a portfolio of bonds of many, many states. That's one thing. Another thing, if you don't travel to Puerto Rico, Puerto Ricans are coming here. And if they lose their jobs in Puerto Rico and can't find a job in the U.S., well, that imposes welfare costs on other states.
So, Allison, give me your prediction of what is going to be the outcome to solve this problem, because it's not going to go away.
Well, there's two things that could happen. One is that in the next couple months, they could be allowed to file Chapter 9 and they'll have some sort of orderly restructuring, or they won't and there'll just be a lot of lawsuits as people try to figure out what debt has priority.
Peter?
Agree. Allison said it perfectly.
And just in the few moments that we have left, what are some other stories that you guys are paying attention to, Peter?
Oh, I'm paying a lot of attention to China. What a mess. A lot of capital flight, money leaving China, hot money, both foreign and more actually domestic Chinese people themselves trying to get their money out of the country. I don't see an end to that because it seems like every time the yuan depreciates, more money goes out. It's not perceived as a bargain, in other words. It's perceived as, uh-oh, things could get even worse.
Allison?
And in Europe, I'm looking at how different countries are sort of to institute more border control, which could be the end of the Schengen Agreement, which is really sort of the bedrock of the European Union.
That's the agreement that allows for
free movement across countries.
And the implications for that?
You could argue that there wasn't a great economic justification for the EU, but there was at least a political one and a unity. So once you institute border controls between countries, I mean, what do you really wonder what they have?
Well, Allison Schrager with Quartz and Peter Coy with Bloomberg Businessweek, thank you so much for joining.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to Money Talking from WNYC.